Hello and welcome to this archive recording of a live-streamed exploring session I produced at the beginning of the plague outbreak in the year of our Cat Lord 2020. Beware the Cat by William Baldwin is a most excellent book, which I have since performed readings of and am currently rehearsing a solo show of. These exploring sessions, five in total, were live-streamed in the afternoon on my personal YouTube channel, because Beyond didn't actually have one at that particular moment, so I am finally archiving it on this stream and creating a Beware the Cat playlist while I'm at it. Beyond some minor cuts, I'm leaving the recordings mostly as recorded, with much of the blah 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 in place. There are errors in my reading and initial thoughts, but that's part of the process. Till next time, I leave you with Past Robert. Hello and welcome to part two of Beware the Cat by William Baldwin. We're not very far into the narrative. I did a lot of background stuff last time, so don't be afraid if you're jumping in now, if you're worried about being caught unawares. Important trigger warning is, of course, not only is some of this quite dark, this is in many ways a bit of a horror show coming up, a bit spooky, a bit mysterious, a bit strange, but it is also, shall we say, not an ecumenical matter. This is very much an anti-Catholic text written by a Protestant writer in the context of, at the time when he first started writing it, being in the court of Edward VI, and then soon following that, Mary I, at which point he stopped attempting to write and publish the text, and got on with not doing that. There's lots about to come up as we complete the first part of the oration of Master Streamer. And for those who haven't caught up with the first episode, this is very much a story within a story. So the conceit of the book is that various interluders rehearsing and producing plays for the court are all chambered in the same room, and in the middle of the night they get discussing about the nature of reason and whether animals have reason or not. And Master Streamer then starts telling a story to the people in the room, allegedly a true story. And the story which he is now telling in his slightly, I decided because his name's is a streamer that is all a bit of a stream, and he talks he talks a bit like that. In my first draft interpretation of this, this is live, remember, so I'm figuring this out to some degree as I go along, rehearsing each morning and pulling the threads together. So he's telling the story of how one night himself, where he lived, he's surrounded by cats making noises in the middle of the night, and his servants members of his household start talking about cats. And one member of the household tells a story of a cat that that could talk and spoke to a chap in Staffordshire, telling him that Grim Malkin was dead. And this fellow goes back to his own house and tells this strange event to his wife, and his household cat overhears this as well and speaks to the household saying, "Grim Malkin's dead, well then I'm off," basically, and leaves the house. Now another of the household says, "Well, it's funny you should say that, because when I was in Ireland, I heard about a Grim Malkin as well. And what was the timescale that this all happened?" Well, in that case, I can tell you what happened to Grim Malkin. And this is the tale that this old retainer, you get the impression it's an old retainer, not necessarily actually an Irish person themselves. You get the impression that he just went to Ireland. His name's, I believe, Thomas, coming up, though at this stage you do not know this. And so the story takes up with this servant telling Master Streamer and the other members of the household about this story of an incident that happened in Ireland. While I was in Ireland in the time that Mac Morrow and all the rest of the wild lords were the king's enemies, what time also mortal war was between the Filsharrises and the prior and convent of the Abbey of Tintern, who counted them the king's friends and subjects, whose neighbour was Caer MacCat, a wild Irishman, then the king's enemy, and one which daily made inroads into the county of Washford, and burned such towns, and carried away all such cattle as he might come by means whereof all the country from Clementa Ross became a vast wilderness, and is scarce recovered unto this day. In this time, I say, as I was on a night at Coshy, we, one of Filsbury's churls, we fell in talk, as we have done now, of strange adventures and of cats. And there, among other things, the churl, for so they call all farmers and husbandmen, told me, as you shall hear. There was, not 7 years past, a kern of John Butler's, dwelling in the fassock of Bantry, called Patrick a Poor, who, minding to make a prey in the night upon Caer MacCart, his master's enemy, got him with his boy, for so they call their horse keepers, be they never so old knaves, into his country, and in the night time entered into a town of two houses, and brake in and slew the people, and then took such cattle as they found, which was a cow and a sheep, and departed therewith homeward. But doubting they should be pursued, the cur dogs made such a shrill barking, he got into a church, thinking to lurk there till midnight was past. For there he was sure that no man would respect or seek him, for the wild Irish men had churches in such reverence, till our men taught them the contrary. But they neither would nor durst either rob aught thence, or hurt any man that took the churchyard for sanctuary. No, though he had killed his father. And while this kern was in the church, he thought it best to dine, for he had eaten little that day. Wherefore he made his boy go gather sticks, and strake fire with his furs, and made a fire in the church, and killed the sheep, and after the Irish fashion laid it thereupon and roasted it. But when it was ready, and that he thought to eat it, there came in a cat, and set her by him, and said in Irish, Shane Fuel, which is, give me some meat. He, amazed at this, gave her the quarter that he had in his hand, which immediately she did eat up, and asked for more, till she had consumed all the sheep, and like a cormorant, not satisfied therewith, asked still for more, wherefore they supposed it were the devil, and therefore, thinking it wisdom to please him, killed the cow which they had stolen, and when they had flayed it, gave the cat a quarter, which she immediately devoured. Then they gave her two other quarters, and in the meanwhile, after the country fashion, they did cut a piece of the hide and pricked it upon four stakes which they set about the fire, and therein they set a piece of the cow for themselves, and with the rest of the hide they made each of them laps to wear about their feet like brogues, both to keep their feet from hurt all the next day, and also to serve for meat the next night, if they could none get, by broiling them upon coals. By this time the cat had eaten three quarters, and called for more, wherefore they gave her that which was a seething, and doubting lest when she had eaten that she would eat them too, because they had no more for her. They got them out of the church, and the kern took his horse, and away he rode as fast as he could hie. When he was a mile or two from the church, the moon began to shine, and his boy espied the cat upon his master's horse behind him, told him, whereupon the kern took his dart, and turning his face toward her, flang it, and stroke her thorough with it. But immediately there came to her such a sight of cats, that after long fight with them his boy was killed and eaten up. And he himself as good and as swift as his horse had much to do to scape. When he was come home and had put his harness, which was a corselet of mail made like a shirt, and his sewel covered over with gilt leather and crested with otocine, all weary and hungry, set him down by his wife and told her his adventure, which, when a kitling, which his wife kept scarce half a year, had heard, up she started and said,
"Hast thou killed Grim Malkin?"
And therewith she plunged in his face, and with her teeth took him by the throat, and ere she could be taken away, she had strangled him. This the churl told me, now about 34 winters past, and it was done, as he and divers other credible men informed me, not 7 years before. Whereupon I gathered that this Grim Malkin was it which the cat in Cank Wood set news of unto the cat which we heard of even now. "Tush," quoth another that sat by, "your conjecture is too unreasonable, for to admit that cats have reason, and that they do in their own language understand one another, yet how should a cat in Cankwood know what is done in Ireland?" "How?" quoth he. "Even as we know what is done in the realms of France, Flanders, and Spain, yea, and almost in all the world beside. There be few ships but have cats belonging unto them, which bring news unto their fellows out of all quarters."
"Yea," quoth the other, "but why should all cats love to hear of Grim Malkin? Or how should Grim Malkin eat so much meat as you speak of? Or why should all cats so labour to revenge her death?"
"Nay, that passeth my cunning,"
quoth he,
"to show in all. Howbeit in part conjectures may be as thus. It may be the Grim Malkin and her line is as much esteemed and hath the same dignity among cats as either the humble or master bee hath among the whole hive, at whose commandment all bees are obedient, whose succour and safeguard they seek, whose wrongs they'll revenge, or as the Pope hath had ere this all over Christendom, in whose cause all his clergy would not only scrat and bite but kill, and burnt to powder, though they know not why, whomsoever they thought to think but once against him. Which Pope, all things considered, devoureth more at every meal than Grim Malkin did at her last supper."
"Nay," said I then, "although the Pope by exactions and other bagachical trumpery have spoiled all people of mighty spoils, yet as touching his own person, he eateth and weareth as little as any other man, though peradventure more sumptuous and costly, and greater abundance provided. And I heard a very proper saying in this behalf of King Henry the VII, when a servant told him what abundance of meat he had seen at an abbot's table, he reported him to be a great glutton. He asked if the abbot ate up all, and when he answered no, but his guests did eat the most part, 'Aha!' quoth the king, 'thou callest him glutton for his liberality to feed thee and such other unthankful churls.' Like to this fellow are all ruffians, for let honest, worshipful men of the city make them good cheer, or lend them money as they commonly do, what have they for their labour? Either foul, reproachful names as dunghill churls, cuckold knaves, or else spiteful and slanderous reports as to be usurers and deceivers of the common weal. And although that some of them be such indeed, yet I abhor to hear other of whom they deserve well so lewdly to report them. But now to return to your communication. I marvel how Grimalkin, as you term her, if she were no bigger, could eat so much meat at once.
I do not think, quoth he that told the tale, that she did eat all. Although she asked all, but took her choice and left the rest by, as we see in the feeding of many things. For a wolf, although a coney be more than can eat, yet she will kill a crow or twain for his breakfast, likewise all other ravenous beasts. Now that love and fellowship and a desire to save their kind is among friends, I know by experience. For there was one that hired a friend of mine in pastime to roast a cat alive, and promised him for his labour 20 shillings. My friend, to be sure, caused a cooper to fasten him into a hogshead, in which he turned a spit whereupon was a quick cat. But ere he had turned a while, whether it was the smell of the cat's wool that singed, or else her cry that called them, I cannot tell. But there came such a sort of cats that if I and other hardy men, which were well scat for our labour, had not behaved us the better, the hogshead, as fast as it was hooped, could not have kept my cousin from them. Indeed, quoth a well-learned man, and one of excellent judgment that was there within the company, it doth appear that there is in cats, as in all other kinds of beasts, a certain reason and language whereby they understand one another. But as touching this Grimalkin, I take rather to be an haggard or a witch than a cat. For witches have often gone in that likeness, and thereof hath come the proverb, as true as common, that a cat hath 9 lives, that is to say, a witch may take on her a cat's body 9 times.
Yeah. Well, by my faith, sir, that this is strange, quote I myself, that a witch should take on her a cat's body. I have read that the pythonesses could cause their spirits to take upon them dead men's bodies. The airy spirits, which we call demons, of which kind incub and succubus, Robin Goodfellow, the fairy, and goblins, which the miners call telchines, could at their pleasure take upon them any other sorts. But that a woman, being so large a body, should strain her into the body of a cat, or into that form either, I have not heard of, nor can well perceive how it may be, which maketh me, I promise you, believe it the less.
Well, Master Streamer,
quoth he,
I know you are not so ignorant herein as you make yourself. This is your accustomed fashion always to make men believe that you be not so well learned as you be. Sapiens enim celat scientium, which appeareth well by Socrates. For I know beings skilled as you be in the tongues chiefly called Arabic and Egyptian, and having read so many authors wherein, you must needs be skilful in these matters. But where you spake of in intrusion of a woman's body into a cat, you either play Nicodem or the stubborn popish conjurer, whereof the one would creep into his mother's belly again, that the other would bring Christ out of heaven to thrust him into a piece of bread. But as the one of them is gross and the other perverse, so in this point I must place you with one of them. For although witches may take upon them cats' bodies, or alter the shape of their or other bodies, yet this is not done by putting their bodies there into, but either by bringing their souls for the time out of their bodies and putting them in the other, or by deluding the sight and fantasies of the seers. as when I make a candle with the brain of a horse and brimstone, the light of the candle maketh all kinds of heads appear horse heads. But yet it altereth the form of no head, but deceiveth the right conception of the eye, which through the false light receiveth a like form. I cannot tell, sir, by what means witches do change their own likeness and the shapes of other things, but I have heard of so many and seen so much myself that I am sure they do. For in Ireland, as they have been in England, witches are for fear had in high reverence, and they be so cunning that they can change the shapes of things as they list at their pleasure, and so deceive the people thereby, that an act was made in Ireland that no man should buy any red swine. The cause whereof was this. Witches used to send to the markets many red swine fair and fat to see unto, as any might be, and would in that form continue long, but it chanced the buyers of them to bring them to any water. Immediately they found them returned either into wisps of hay, straw, old rotten boards, or some other such like trumpery, by means whereof they have lost their money or such other cattle as they gave in exchange for them. There is also in Ireland one nation whereof some one man and woman are at every 7 years end turned into wolves, and so continue in the woods the space of 7 years, and if they hap to live out the time, they return to their own form again. The other twain are turned for the like time into the same shape, which is a penance, as they say, enjoined that stock by St. Patrick for some wickedness of their ancestors. And, yea, this is true. Witnessed a man whom I left alive in Ireland, who had performed this 7 years' penance, whose wife was slain, while she was a wolf in her last year. This man told to many men whose cattle he had worried, and whose bodies he had assailed while he was a wolf so plain, and evident tokens showed such scares of wounds which other men had given him, both in his man-shape before he was a wolf, and in his wolf-shape since, which all appeared upon his skin, that it was evident to all men, yea, and to the bishop too, upon whose grant it was recorded and registered, that the matter was undoubtedly past peradventure. And I am sure you are not ignorant of the hermit whom, as St. Augustine writeth, a witch would be in an ass's form ride upon to market. But now, how these witches made their swine, and how these folk were turned from shape to shape, whether by some ointment whose clearness deceived the men's sights till either the water washed away the ointment, or that the clearness of the water excelled the clearness of the ointment, and so betrayed the operation of it, I am as uncertain as I am sure it were the spirits called demons, forced by enchantment, moved these bodies, till shame of their shape discovered caused them to leave them. But as for the transformation of the wolves, is either miraculous as Naaman's leprosy in the flock of Jesse, or else to shameful, crafty, malicious sorcery. And as the one way is unsearchable, so I think there might be means be found to guess how it is done the other way. For witches are by nature exceeding malicious. And it may chance that some witches, for displeasure taken we this wolvish nation, gave her daughter charge in her deathbed, when she taught her the science, for till that time witches never teach it, nor then but to their eldest and best beloved daughter, that she should at every 7 years' end confect some ointment, which for 7 years' space might be enforced against all other clearness to represent unto man's eyes the shape of a wolf, and in the night season to go herself in likeness, either of the mare or some other night form, and anoint therewith the bodies of some couple of that kindred which she hated, and after that time she should change her daughter, to observe the same, and to charge her daughter after her to do the like for ever. So this charge is given always by tradition with the science, and so is continued and observed by this witch's offspring, by whom two of this kindred, as it may be supposed, are from every 7 years' space turned into wolves.
heard these tales and the reason of the doing shared by the teller. Ah, Thomas, quoth I, for that was his name. He died afterward of a disease which he took in Newgate, where he lay long for suspicion of magic, because he had desired a prisoner to promise him his soul after he was drafted. Ah, Thomas, I perceive now the old proverb is true. The still sow eateth up all the draff. You go and behave yourself so simply that a man would think you were but a fool, but you have uttered such a proof of natural knowledge in this your brief talk, as I think, except myself, and few of the more best learned alive, none could have done the like.
You say your pleasure, Master Streamer,
quoth he.
As for me, I have said nothing save that I have seen, and whereof any man might conjecture, as I do. You have spoken full well. You gave occasion of this tale, and your conjectures are right reasonable. For as like by ointments, as you suppose the Irish witches do make the form of swine and wolves appear to all men's sight, so think I that by the like power English witches and Irish witches may do and turn themselves into cats. For I heard it told while I was in the university, by a credible clerk of Oxford, how that in the days while he was a child, an old woman was brought before the official and accused for a witch, which in the likeness of a cat would go into a neighbour's house and steal thence what she listed. The complaint was proved true by a place of the woman's skin, which her accusers, when a firebrand that they hurled at her had singed while she went a-thieving, in a cat's likeness. So that, to conclude as I began, I think that the cat which you call Grimalkin, whose name carrieth in it matter to confirm my conjecture, for Malkin is a woman's name, as witnesseth the proverb, there be mo maids than Malkin. I think, I say, that it was a witch in a cat's likeness, and for that the wit and craft of her other natural cats that were not so wise have had her, and her race in reverence among them, thinking her to be but a mere cat, as they themselves were, like as we like fools long time for his sly and crafty juggling, reverence the Pope, thinking him to have been but a man, though much holier than we ourselves were, whereas indeed he was a very incarnated devil, like as this Grimalkin was an incarnate witch.
Why then, sir, said I, do you think that natural cats have wit, and that they understand one another?
What else, Master Streamer, quoth he, there is no kind of sensible creatures, but have reason and understanding, whereby, in their kind, each understandeth other, and do therein some point so excel, that the consideration thereof moved Pythagoras, as you know, to believe and affirm that after death men's souls went into beasts, and beasts' souls into men, and every one according to his desert in his former body. And although his opinion be fond and false, yet that which drew him thereto is evident and true, and that is the wit and reason of diverse beasts, and again the dull, beastly, brutish ignorance of diverse men. But the beasts understand one another, and fowls likewise, beside that we by daily experience in marking them, the story of the Bishop of Alexandria by record doth prove. For he found the mean either through diligence so to mark them, or else through magic natural so to subtilitate his sensible power, either by purging his brain by dry drinks and fumes, or else to augment the brains of his power perceptible by other natural medicines, they understood all kinds of creatures by their voices. For being on a time, sitting at dinner in a house among his friends, he hearkened diligently to a sparrow that came fleeing and chirping to other that were about the house, and smiled to himself to hear her, and when one of the company desired to know why he smiled, he said, at the sparrow's tail. For she telleth them, quoth he, that in the highway not a quarter of a mile hence, a sack of wheat is even now fallen of a horseback and broken, and all the wheat run out, and therefore biddeth them come thither to dinner. And when the guests mused hereat, sent to prove the truth, they found it even as he told them.
When this tale was ended, the clock struck 9, whereupon old Thomas, because he had far to his lodging, took his leave and departed. The rest of the company gat them also either to their business or to their beds. And I went straight to my chamber, before remembered, and took a book in my hand to have studied, but the remembrance of this former talk so troubled me that I could think of nothing else, but mused still, and, as it were, examined more narrowly that every man had spoken.
And thus ends the first oration of Master Streamer. And that also ends today's part. It's a really interesting set of stories. I may, I'm going to just say here that I may have slightly elided who the speakers were at times. It is actually slightly unclear precisely how this is essentially a three-way discussion, but I made a decision to flatten it as much as possible down to two people, the narrator of this story and his the person telling it to him, Thomas, and let the third person who sort of started it all be only jump in early on. It is possible, and I'm genuinely not sure at times, whether actually the third speaker is speaking at certain points. But it seemed to make sense to do it that way. I did completely misread 3 to 4 winters past, 34 winters past. I apologise for that. It's live. These things happen. And there are various little party quirks to the text, which a more thorough going over will tidy up in the future. I have to say, I would like to produce a fuller version of this further down the line. It's going to be a while in coming. I also quite think it would work really well as an adaptation, as a more dramatic adaptation. I think it could be turned into a really fun series. But again, that's one possibly to put out to other people who might be interested. Little shades there of stories that you may have come across in other bits of literature. Certainly in Dr. Faustus, the idea that you might sell someone an animal that when it enters water, it just turns into a pile of straw or just disappears. That turns up quite a bit. I really like the idea, I've not come across this before, and I don't know if it's elsewhere, but the idea that the cat has 9 lives, and it's actually just a witch has the power to get into a cat 9 times, or 9 different cats during their life. I think that's a fascinating thing I hadn't stumbled across before, so that was really, really interesting. Next time, in the second part of the oration, we will go deeper into the world of cats, and I wouldn't say it goes Dr. Doolittle, but it definitely goes a little bit more, possibly in that direction.
And that was my Plague Year exploration of Beware the Cat by William Baldwin. Didn't I sound so young? If you'd like to hear more from this text, you're in luck, as not only are there a host of readings and discussions around this text, but I'm also working on a solo production right now. If you'd like it to come to your area of the United Kingdom, there's a link in the show description about how to get in touch. You'll also find there are links to all the audio recordings and discussions of the text available now. And if you like generally what we do, support our work at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, or you can throw us a one-off bonus at ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare. Goodbye.